Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is February 13th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. I am Austin Walker, and joining me, as almost always, Danielle Riendo.
Hi. It's good to be here.
In Brooklyn, in Vice HQ, in Lobby 1.
Live from Lobby 1.
And also on the line, Patrick Klepek.
I'm here.
Patrick Klepek.
I'm here.
Is here with us today.
Well,
this windy day. Is it windy there? I hear it's windy sometimes in Chicago.
No, not today. Yesterday, though. So, you know, I mean, you're close.
Yeah. Well, today I almost was like, oh, we should stream from home because last night I woke up and we didn't have any hot water or
any hot heat.
My favorite kind of
heat.
And I needed it because it's cold right now in New York.
How cold?
City.
What's the cold?
It's only like the 20s right now. So it's like not, it's cold, but it's not the coldest it's been in the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
So like,
yeah.
I'm glad it happened last night and not like this time last week.
That's right. Fair.
This time last week, it might have been 60.
There were teens.
I have to understand, New York in the winter is
60s, teens, sometimes somewhere in the middle.
Sometimes. But it was one of those things like, oh, I have to wake up and like make sure and stick around until the heat is fixed. And I wanted to record from home because I was just at home. And then I went to go like, oh, let me see how it sounds. And my mic was picking up the wind outside. So I couldn't even
it's a blustery
fuck with it.
Day.
I couldn't even joke about it. So
yeah.
Here we are in Lobby One. How was your weekends? How were both of your weekends?
Good. I played a lot of stuff that we can't talk about.
Well, that doesn't help.
There was a lot of that.
But
I also played a little more Neo.
Oh.
Which was...
How's that going? Are you sticking with it?
I'm sticking with it to some degree. I didn't jump ship. I want to learn a little bit more.
I appreciate your dedication to self-harm.
I want to do something that I actively dislike in the service of... Well, we're not quite sure yet, but you dislike it.
I know that people really love these games. I know that there is a breaking point. I don't know if – I feel like I've done the probably –
I was going to say, you've already proved it. Like, you beat one of these
that.
Games. You've checkboxed
right.
it. You're good.
It's true.
You're right.
So, wait. Is this – and also the added element of amazing, like, self-hurt here that you're putting yourself through is that, like – This is your – it's your birthday today.
Happy birthday,
Danielle.
Thank you. It's really
exciting. You could be doing anything with your birthday, and you decided to play Neo.
I mean
– a game you're not sure you like at all.
Let's be real. I only played like another like half hour.
Oh, okay.
I'm not like putting myself through torture. I'm just like dipping in being like, just want to see.
Only 68 hours to go.
Oh, good. If I play half an hour a week –
Yeah,
you know,
you'll be fine. You'll be fine by the time Donald Trump is no longer president.
Exactly.
One day you'll get through.
One day I'll be there.
One day we'll all get on the other side.
Is Trump the last boss of Neo? Has anyone gotten there yet? Is
that, oh God.
I don't know. Like, we'll see.
I hope he is.
Trump's been hanging out with people in Japan lately, or not in Japan, from Japan lately.
Yes.
So maybe there's like a cross cultural exchange situation.
Is that like
Trump
did the
Neo.
Yeah did the when they came to visit this weekend? Did they bring a copy of Neo to
of
like
Neo,
you know, sometimes
like, hey,
it's like an exchange of gifts.
Yeah.
I would, you know what?
Here, do this.
I'd pay to watch Donald Trump play Neo. I'd do it. I'd be into seeing. I'd watch that.
Can I pay like a charity I respect?
Yeah, I'll donate to ACLU to sue Donald Trump to get him to play Neo.
To play Neo, please.
That's a good exchange of things. That's a good. Yeah, I like that.
Anything else? Or did you get up to any other?
Let's see.
Stuff that you can
like the other two games I played quite a bit of are under embargo at the moment. One of them will be not under embargo as of tomorrow, so we'll be able to do a thing on that.
Right.
Sure, which is cool.
That's cool.
Extra cool. Let's see. Did I play anything else? Not really. Just a little bit of Neo and other stuff.
Patrick, how about you?
I played the game Single Dad.
Nice. Is that, that's like one of these empathy games I'm hearing about on Steam?
No, it's where your wife goes out of town for the first time, and then you have to take care of a child by yourself, and you realize, oh, shit. How do people do this every day? That seems like a nightmare.
Yes. Moms are very good, actually.
Moms are good at
parents,
what they
like,
do.
Parents, like primary caregivers are really fucking good at what they do.
Yes.
So,
except
so,
when they're not, in which case, please be better primary caregivers. But
please
the ones
get help.
Who do well.
Yeah. That's,
so I decided
tough.
To not be a single dad, go to Wisconsin where there were a bunch of my mom's friends who would watch this baby for me, and then I was
Patrick.
Pretty good.
This is your chance to bond with your child.
I did. I bonded, but I bonded by also like putting her in the arms of other people.
You shared
who wanted to help.
Right.
You bonded on the trip over. Right?
Exactly.
You know, you had a baby road trip, and
that's
then you're
fair.
Like, I'm good. We did this.
Look, that's fair.
Look, Austin, I did all the bonding I needed to at 4 a.m. every night when I have to feed this child. So
okay.
The bonding has occurred.
That's fair.
Bonding
that's
is
good.
There.
That makes me feel good. God.
The bonding is
Lord.
There.
I like Danielle played a number of games I can't fucking talk about because that's our careers. It's very
that's
strange.
Our lives. Yeah.
What I'll say is it's interesting how on one hand there have been lots of games that give you zero lead time lately. Like For Honor didn't have anything but ahead of time. It had an open beta for the multiplayer stuff.
Yeah.
So if you really wanted to get in early and start playing the multiplayer stuff, you could. But the single player, like the main bulk true game doesn't unlock until today. Or like obviously Bethesda has their whole policy now with games like not having any lead time at all for reviewers, or like a day at most.
With For Honor, though, they seem to have a very specific, like, it's not that that game went dark in the way that, like, a Doom did. Like, with For Honor, they had, like, this very specific strategy of the last 2 weeks, like, partnering with a lot of big streamers on Twitch and YouTube. So, like Lobos Jr., who is, like, one of the biggest Dark Souls streamers. He, like, does all sorts of weird Souls runs. Like, they partnered with a lot of those folks, flew them out, and did a big For Honor event. So, like, it's something where, like, it didn't really get in front of our eyeballs, like, sort of, if you want to think of us as sort of, like, the establishment, like, traditional press. But actually, it seems like they took For Honor out to a different sort of audience and pitched it there.
Which is probably
I think
really
makes
smart.
A lot of sense. Yeah,
yeah. Because I think that's a game that will, in my heart of hearts, I feel like it's going to do the same thing that Rainbow Six Siege did, which is find a really great competitive community that loves the game and can commit enough hours to understand why it's well designed, but probably won't review super well, and the mainstream press probably just like won't get it, man. Like, we're not real gamers.
I'm super into that game.
That game's cool.
Which is shocking, cool. Like, because most games that focus on combat, I'm not super into, because I'm more interested in like MMA and, like, combat,
that, but,
you know,
is
combat
this a situation,
sports.
What's what I'm going to say? Is this a situation where your combat sports background actually aids you in liking the game?
I think it did. When I played it last, it was probably at PAX, PAX West now is what it's called, and I met Sword Dad, James Vandenberg, and I was gushing a little bit because I was like, oh my god, you got stances right, you got lateral movement right. That never happens in a game. It's always so exaggerated, and it's actually like an incredibly subtle thing in the real world. So I got very excited about spacing and movement. I mean, again, it's not the full game yet. Like, I only played an early build, but I super dug it.
Yeah, and people have been digging the beta stuff, so I won't be surprised if it finds a home with a really dedicated fan base.
And nerds who like martial arts,
correct.
I guess.
Right.
You know, all
the but like,
of us.
I mean, it's built for nerds who like either martial arts or who are like way into Vikings or samurai or knights. Like, there's a lot of angles of nerddom that you could find your way into this. So that's I don't know, I'm very curious. That's a game that when I think I first saw it, I didn't write it off, but I definitely thought. This is before Rainbow Six Siege had actually succeeded, I think, in the way that it has. I kind of thought, like, oh, boy. Like, okay, here we go. Like, okay, good luck.
Vikings,
you know?
And that was axe. Yeah.
Really shitty of me. But, like, I it's been really interesting, I think, to see that game, Rainbow Six Siege, the first Titanfall, this move towards, like, oh, we're going to release games that are, like, multiplayer primary things that are $60 at launch. Finding some success, and that's it's cool to be in that place. I think I'm happy that that's a way that
because those are all pretty interesting and weird games. Those are all games with some maybe more niche appeal than necessarily super hardcore mainstream appeal, which makes me happy that they're finding some success.
Yeah, totally. I played like the opposite of a big multiplayer game this weekend.
And then we both did.
Yeah, did you get through it?
Did you?
Take a breath. Yeah.
This is a tough one. All right.
Yeah.
We both played We Are Chicago this weekend.
Yes.
I played it on this laptop, actually, and I played it 2 days ago. It was like I went to a cafe, and I kind of wanted to just, like, put on headphones and, like, not even be in my room. I just wanted to, like, have this vibe of, like, I'm playing it in
public kind
in
of space.
Public, in yeah, a public yeah. space in a weird way. And, man, I have
fears,
a lot
fears,
of...
Fears realized.
Should we set this up for folks who don't know?
Patrick, can you set this up as someone who's written about this game before and your complex feelings about it?
Yeah, we talked about this, I think, during one of our politics podcasts when it came up. The question that someone asked was, what do you do when you want to champion things that are complicated and flawed? And it made me think about We Are Chicago, which is this game that's... I believe made in Chicago. I don't know the exact backgrounds of.
I believe that's true.
I think it's. I'm pretty sure that's true. That attempts to use sort of a Telltale style adventure mechanics design setup in order to tell a story about what it's like to live on the South Side of Chicago. Now, the South Side of Chicago is predominantly African American. It has a history of violence, and there are gangs, but it is not. It is not. You know, it is colloquially called and inappropriately called Chirac, which is deeply offensive, and that's
and also like. Doesn't understand where crime exists in Chicago, actually,
or how it works. Or, you know, if you look at the way Donald Trump talks about Chicago, you would think that we are all under lockdown and we're all dying.
You can't go to the store. You can't go to the store without getting shot, Patrick. And this isn't to say that there isn't a problem with violence.
No, there are huge problems on the South Side of Chicago, but they are more complicated than anarchy in the streets in which everyone is being lined up and shot in an alleyway.
Yeah.
And so, what made this game interesting was like. The idea of touching upon that subject, not doing it from a, you know, with combat mechanics, like trying to avoid some of the pitfalls maybe that Watch Dogs fell into when you have a game that is primarily around sort of action and violence in some ways. And so and also just I think, you know, this website is the kind of website and the people we are champions of games that are trying to tell tough stories, even if they maybe fail at telling those stories, because that's all that stuff is a step in the direction of hopefully telling a better one. But when I checked this game out at I think it was a PAX East 2 years ago, I had such deep reservations about it that I almost didn't write about it because I didn't want to basically take a dump on it, because I was like, this game is not working. It makes me feel uncomfortable. Like maybe it's I also am a big champion for this stuff, so I want to protect this game because hopefully it'll turn out good in the end. And, 2 years later, here we are with, you know, sort of the final product.
And I'm still struggling with that because if you go to their like, Steam forums, for instance, it's just, like, filled with, like, racial slurs and people saying that the game should never have been made.
Yeah.
And like, complaining that there are no white people in the game. Like, it's I still have that gut reaction of, like, ugh. Would it be easier not to engage with this thing at all? But also, I think it's actually bad.
It's really bad.
And I like completely applaud them for trying to go after this. I applaud them for hiring black folks to like help write this game and try to be
several artists, I think.
Yeah, totally.
It's based on on interviews with folks who live on the South Side. So
absolutely.
Like some of the storylines are in some ways inspired by, and you can see all of those.
And sometimes it's good. Every now and then.
Yeah, everyone, and there's like but I don't know, like, sometimes I feel like we're saying that because a lot of it is, like, so, like, doesn't work at all, that, like, this one strand, and you pull on that strand as much as you can.
I want to get more, like, specific a little bit, because I don't think it's, like, useful to just be like, oh, it's bad. So I think, like, for me, the stuff that does work is that at its core, it's a story about a kid named Aaron who is in his final week of high school before either going to college or getting a full-time job, or who knows what his life is going to look like after college or after high school.
Or if he gets into college, because that's like one of the strands is how he's going to do on his finals.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And also he's into poetry. Like there's like stuff happening with his life, and the core of that his entire arc is that he is struggling to figure out what he feels in the tension between feeling safe and feeling like a whole complete person who can walk bravely into the world, who wants to like take his sister to the park, who wants to go to poetry readings, who wants to like have a job and help support his single mom and his little sister. And like there are moments of that that feel really genuine. And then there's like the rest of it, which feels didactic, which feels not
way,
like
way too simplistic.
Incredibly yeah. simplistic. Like the first dude who you get a gun pulled on you in the first 3 seconds, and like the name of the character who pulls it on you is Gangster.
Oh,
and like fuck y'all.
Oh,
just
God.
And then it says like Gangster will remember this, which of course he won't because he's not a real character.
It's this the first thing that
me
is
too.
Written in my
Look,
notebook.
Right here.
It says,
"Oh my,
quote,
he really does. Yeah.
Gangster will remember this. We literally have the same notes separately.
Same
Patrick.
Exact notes.
And. That is the thing that ends up being so frustrating for me about this game. I guess like there's two lines of argument here, and one of them they're both important, I think, because like on one hand you can take the technical argument here, which is that like there's one music loop that plays for this entire game, which is this like
it's
bad,
like a 3 minute little guitar riff.
It's less than 3 minutes, Patrick. It's like 70 seconds.
I tried to tell myself it's 3 minutes because it feels like 6 hours that you're listening to it, even though the game is 90
it's
minutes.
Like 90 minutes to 2 hours long, and it's just like it feels like incidental music in a bad TV procedural. And I bring this up because I think this contributes to the feeling of it being low quality before I get into like the more substantial issues I had with it.
Yeah, because the technical stuff doesn't bother me that much. Like it does. Like it's distracting, but it's not. There was a version of this game that had tens of millions of dollars behind it and like amazing animation rigging and better VO, like if you actually gave this game the aesthetic that it probably wanted, if in a world of resources that allowed that, it would not change my core problems with it.
The thing that it might change is if you had the money to prioritize that stuff, maybe there would be a rap song in this game before the fucking credits. No one in this game talks about the Migos. No one in this game talks about the Bulls. No one in this game has a life outside of being oppressed and black. Like if the Bechdel test is there's two women who talk to each other about or without referencing a man, right?
Yeah.
I want this game needs to have two black characters who talk to each other about anything other than being fucking black. And like I am black. I have those conversations with my black friends. We also talk about the world. We also talk about games. The high points in this game are like Aaron occasionally talking. There's a scene where he talks to his little cousin about poetry. But the poetry is like
deeply political and about things there is no way a kid his age is actually into.
And also would just like not – just isn't – it's – I grew up in poetry communities. I grew up going to slams. It's not this. And like, it's so frustrating. That stuff is already really frustrating. And so like having it then also be backed by this like one guitar riff that is or this like heartbeat sound is really bad. Mm. And that's just like also just like a failure to characterize some of the key characters. Like the one of the key conflicts ends up being about like your friendship with these two other dudes falling apart because of violence and gang violence. But they never get – like they get one scene early on in the game.
Yeah, you get no – like for like 90 minutes, like there's not nearly enough time to explain like why characters who are like your good friends that like go to the park with your sister and like help watch over her so that if there's three of you, like you'll be more safe. Like that makes sense. And then it's like 20 minutes later, like they're in a gang and like robbing things. And it's like there's like a throwaway line that's like, I don't know, man. I fell into it. And it's just like like the art – like –
They spend time with other characters instead. They spend time with like the dude you go to work with, but then he just like kind of disappears from the story, right? Like you don't actually get the characters that they actually spend time with never have stakes involved in their personal lives outside of a loose dialogue moment or two.
Yeah, and it ends up painting this game that like starts from sort of noble ambitions into the sort of black and white, to use simplistic terms, characterization of like what it's like to live on, you know, an area of the world with gangs and things. It ends up feeling like a shitty TV movie as opposed to like actually getting into the nuance of like what they probably would hopefully have gotten in these interviews with these families. And like the best character in the whole game is your mother, like who's actually given
well
like, well
I'll get to my one beef with that in a second, but continue.
Yeah, she actually feels more like a person. Like, you get a sense of, like, her struggles. Like, there was a father in the family. He, at least it wasn't a stereotypical, like,
right,
deadbeat father that left. Like, he died of a disease at when the sister was very young. And I think the character you play, Aaron, was maybe
he was like 11 or something like that.
At least, like, it didn't fall into that immediate trope, which I was worried about.
Yeah.
And, you know, you learn about how, you know, Aaron will talk about how, you know, he hears his mother crying at night, but she doesn't talk about, like, missing her father. Yep. Like, there's stuff like
that. There are those moments.
Yeah,
there are those moments.
Ah, right. Like, okay, like, if you distill this game into its base elements, there's a better way to put it together, but it's the way it's packaged. And not even just the characterization, like, it's just sloppy. Like, I started making a count.
It's just sloppy.
There are different things that I made counts of on my,
okay,
in my notes.
Okay, let me get your counts.
Well, one was the amount of spelling errors that I found in the dialogue. Like, you have to look at the, like, they put subtitles on in the game by default, and so because your main character doesn't speak, but everyone else does.
And if he did, it'd be a lot better, frankly, if he had a voice.
Austin, there is a part of the game where that you are asked to demonstrate your poetry skills for the poetry slam, and all the characters around you are talking VO, and then you do a poetry slam moment where they put on a shitty beat, but then you just see blank dialogue, like, for 30 seconds while you... Anyway, so I wrote down, I got up to, like, 12 or 13 spelling errors. We're, like, egregious things where it's, like, letters are just, capitalized in the middle of a sentence, and it's just, it ruins your ability to, like, stay immersed in the world and the story. And also, I made marks every time I found a photo of Obama, Malcolm X, or MLK, because they used all the same photos every time in every room.
Patrick,
but then, don't
we
worry.
All got the same Obama photo when Obama got elected. He's fucking sent him out to us, and he said, here you go. I know this is important for you and your family. Put this up. Real talk, though. Like, my whole family does have the same photo of Obama.
Well, but here's it. So I wrote down Obama 4, MLK 4, Malcolm X 3, and then random photo of Neil deGrasse Tyson 1.
That didn't happen. Oh,
but you have, like, yeah, listen, that teacher loves poetry slams and Neil deGrasse Tyson. All right? So here's another reason. Like, this is the none of me clowning on this game would have happened if not for, I think, what I feel like is, like, the final two big things. And I'm spoiling We Are Chicago here. Like, I am fired up about this game. If you don't want to hear about the final act of We Are Chicago, skip ahead 5 minutes. I'm just giving you that warning right now. But I think, but the thing I'm about to say is, like, my substantive critique of its position on crime and blackness and what should be done, and its failure to address some of this stuff, which is you end up in the situation where your two best friends who you've never seen and who somehow don't really know anything about your life wind up in opposing gangs. And you end up having a conversation with your mother about it where you're like, Ma, I just don't know what to do. Like, I feel fucking stuck here. And, like, some of that dialogue is also pretty good when your character is trying to work through his own feelings about, like, wanting to be optimistic for his little sister versus feeling like there's no hope. And you get to this conversation with your mother where you're like, I just don't know what to do. And she says, like, you know, there's something that this generation just doesn't have. And this is, like, the moral core of this story at the end. Like, this is, like, the last good moment of, like, a character coming down to offer judgment and a way forward. The mother, as Patrick said, has been set up as being this really intelligent, smart, hardworking character. And then you're given two options to reply. And your options are either, like, on one hand, it's, like, education, religion. And the other one is you mean, like, role models? And, like, I would take any of those things as one direction for, like, a thing a person might say would help crime and communities that are afflicted by crime and you know, economic disparity and all that. Like, I don't think any of those are a singular solution by any means, but you can see specific instances in history of this country where those things helped people.
Yes.
Your mother says, like, no, Aaron, what this generation doesn't have is a conscience, or what's the other word she says that's, like, the fucking worst. It's basically just, like, the most respectability politics. She didn't say hard work. She says something that was just, like, Fuck, I'm losing it. I have to check my notes. This is bad. Common sense. That's what she says. Oh. Common sense. These kids today just don't have common sense, Patrick. And it's just like, I can't fucking believe you Charles Barkley-looking motherfuckers.
They
like,
also they make no references to the Bulls in this game, but they do quote
none.
Charles Barkley.
They do quote Charles Barkley. But, like, that's the thing. It's just like,
it'd be fine if that was one viewpoint that was represented, because like that certainly exists as like a shitty viewpoint to have about like what the actual problems are that have resulted in like a lot of gang violence in the South.
Common sense and decency, like, but that ain't it. Like, so this comes on the heels of there just being this really great moment that was being passed around on Twitter of this dude at an MSNBC kind of like town hall style thing, a black dude from Chicago who got up and gave this like really amazing, rousing critique of Rahm Emanuel's policies, his failure to address the actual concerns of black folks in Chicago.
Yeah.
And ended it by basically saying like, it's economics, dummy, right? Like, it's always economics. And that's where I think this game fails the most, is that at the end of the day, it has nothing – it gestures towards like, oh, well, they have it hard. But because it never characterizes the people who fall into gang violence, because it never actually shows you what their lives are like, it only ever shows you the like model minority character who's like working a job and taking care of his little sister and has no interest in or no pressure to fall into gang violence.
It's a game that sets itself as a Telltale-style adventure with the whole like blank will remember this or blank
yes.
notice that.
Yes.
And so if there was – I would have been interested if there was an opportunity for me to, like, if there were these instances for Aaron, the main character, to, like, see those temptations,
totally.
Fall into those temptations. Like if anything, the story should have probably pushed him in that direction.
Yes.
Because my guess is the mass majority of people playing this game are going to be white people who would think they could learn something about an experience
yes.
they know they know very little about, even as someone who has lived in Chicago. Like, I still know very little about the South Side experience. But instead, what you actually get is, like, this milquetoast, like, no,
yes.
like, you get no actual insight into the actual complicated economic and socioeconomic problems of these people, and you just get them in like glances of like a half a scene or two, but the actual experience of the character you have actually in some ways feels
yeah.
like what like an old white person is going to say, what's wrong with the black people?
Why don't
the South
they have common
Chicago?
Sense and decency?
Why don't
right.
they pull
if
up their pants?
Your,
why is their underwear right. out? Like that's
exactly.
That's what it feels a little bit like in sort of the
well,
end of day even if that's not the politics.
And
the
I want to be clear,
it,
that is a position that lots of older black folks have about
sure.
crime, and it's underinformed and it's wrong, and like. It's just like a remarkably short-sighted way to position what should have been a game that was striking, that was like that was determined to say something and that won you over by its bravery in showing you something, in its courage of showing you why someone might fall into gang violence. Instead, just like takes the most boring like status quo position on this shit. And then, and like, this is my final thing that just like it echoes back to some of my beef that I had with Watch Dogs 2 and one of the characters there, which is that there are no futures for black people.
Yeah, there's
in
no
stories.
You don't notice.
The whole arc
the kid,
of this game.
Does this kid go to college?
That's the whole arc. Will he go to college? Will he stay at home and get a full-time job to help
I don't
support
know.
His mother? Will he go into poetry more? None of that fucking matters, because what happens is one of your friends kills another one of your friends, and you go to the vigil for him, and that's the end of the game. You
no,
don't see.
Hold on.
Yeah,
you
all right, you're right. It's not.
You go
it's
to
not.
The vigil in which, like, instead of it actually being a remembrance for your friend where stories are told about his life, which would have been
yep.
maybe a poignant moment
yep.
for the game to, like, imbue this characterization for a character that didn't have any other scenes. Instead, someone gets up on stage and like pitches you to like put in time and money for services in Chicago, which are two real services in
yes,
Chicago.
And
so in
deserve
some
support.
It was well-meaning, except it like
yes.
completely misses sticking the landing for what it's trying to do in the story. And then it says, "Do you?"
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
want to leave the vigil, and you're like, oh, sure, I'll, like, go on to the next scene. And instead, that's the end of the game, and it cuts to, like, a rousing, like, thumping rap song, like, right after you're there at a vigil for your friend!
And that's the end. Like, you don't find out. End. You don't
find out. No epilogue, no lines of, like, Aaron went on to, like, be, you know, to escape, and then went back and we volunteered in the South Side to try and help other people. Nothing.
No one knows. There's no, and that's the problem with the mother's line being the final statement on what should be done, is because we don't get to see, you know, reform. We don't get to see escape. We don't get to see someone lifting other people up. We don't get to see failure. We don't get to see him even falling. Like, I would have been happier if the end of this was a compelling vision of him falling into the same trap and not escaping. And instead, we get nothing. And that, to me, is just like, you didn't know what the core of your thing was. You didn't know what the heart of what the thing is you were trying to address. And in an attempt, I think, to be as broad as possible, they ended up hitting very little. Again, I think there are a handful of moments that I think are really stellar. I think it's like, I think it is really cool to just see a black family like having dinner. It is really cool to just like walk home with your friend. Like, I like these sorts of games, and those moments were pretty good. And I wish they had felt like those characters had lives beyond them, and I wish it was smoother. But mostly, I wish that it had a sort of political heart that actually guided it, instead of just kind of feeling like it was patched together from a dozen different ideas about what and why crime exists in Chicago and how to address it. And it's just like, I don't know. I didn't expect to get this heated, Patrick.
It sounds fair. It sounds like you have every fucking right to be heated about it. I haven't played it. So take this with a grain of salt.
I think in some ways it's still worth... I would still recommend a lot of people, if you're interested in these types of games and these types of stories, like, it's the reason, you know, I wrote an article last year, it was like, you know, why it's worth playing, you know, bad video games. Like, this is actually an example, I think, of a bad game worth playing, because one, like, you know, I think we all still respect what it was trying to do, even if we're deeply critical of the execution and where it went. So I don't question the motives. I want to make it clear, I don't necessarily question the motives.
Not at all.
The people who meant to who made this, like, it was bold and interesting, and they tried, and we just think they missed, and there are ways for other stories to learn from what didn't work here to hopefully tell a better version of this or a story kind of like this. But it also, the ways it doesn't work, I feel are very instructive if you want a sense of like why a story like this doesn't work, and then find your own response to it so you can better identify how you respond to those stories going forward. So
You had a question?
Observation. No, it's okay. I haven't played the game, so it's more than fair. But when I was at the ACLU, I was looking into sort of making games for change.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of generally this kind of product that, you know, tells a specific story or supports charity or does, you know, something like this. And I saw a lot of games that were maybe not on this level of sort of egregious, you know, like the way it's sort of walking all over things or it's put together in a sort of weird way. But what I saw a lot of was a lot of design by committee, by people who aren't necessarily game designers, who thought like, oh no, we have to get this message in and we have to get this message in, we have to get this message in. And it never really actually gels in any kind of coherent way. And maybe some of that happened, or maybe the person guiding this just didn't quite find that vision. I don't know.
Was it that separated the games that worked that you saw from the ones that floundered in that way?
A really coherent vision and a you know, here we go with the player experience goals thing. But yeah, like actually really putting that first and foremost. Like, how do you want your player to feel? It's just have that goal, have every design decision you make, have every aesthetic decision that you make, everything support the feeling you want your player to feel. Do you want them to be empowered? Do you want them to be disempowered? Do you want them to feel smart? Do you want them to feel like, no, life really sucks? You know, cart life obviously is the gold standard for something like this, where it's like, no, actually, you're using mechanics and you're using aesthetics to show, you know.
I forgot that there was actually a mini cart life in this game also.
Oh, no.
You have a job where you have to make change. And
it's awesome. The less said about that.
All right.
That
okay.
Okay, there was another thing I started marking. So when you go, you have this job where you work at this barbecue restaurant, and like multiple times the game makes you go to work there. And there's like, maybe their ambitions were like to show the tedium of like a teenage job. And like that could have been noble.
I didn't hate that stuff as much as I thought I would, but.
Well, but what made me laugh was like, so the way the minigame works is like, you know, people come up and give their order, like hamburger, gyro, like whatever. And you have to mark that and then they hand you money. And then you go over to the cash register and you like add or subtract a dollar. So you can basically just, you know, calculate the change. Every time they give you $10.
Every single time.
I marked it down. It was like 11 times. And I just started sitting.
I was those Bushwick 10s, but you know, this is Chicago. It's not Bushwick. So.
Sitting here with a beer, and I was like, well, here's another $10.
It's the whole time.
And the end of the game still sort of bothers me because I kind of thought where the game was going. I was trying to give the game more credit than I should have at that point. But at the end, like when they're like bringing up these services that you could get involved with, I thought maybe the game was actually going to kind of play to someone like myself or a lot of other people. It's like, hey man, like it's not enough to be like an ignorant white dude that wonders what it's like to be on the south side of Chicago. Like, motherfucker, like get out and do something about it instead of just posting a tweet or going on Facebook and like, here are services that you can give. Like, there's a way they could have rewritten that scene that like got meta about the whole experience of like playing a game, which sometimes feels like what it's like for a lot of people to just watch a documentary or retweet something that like
the Spike Lee turns to the camera moment and actually like, no, you motherfucker, like Patrick, do something.
Like, and then that, like, there, so maybe I was rewriting it in my head, was like, if that's the way they framed this and then said, this, you know, life's not a video game, man. Maybe not. But you know what I mean?
There's like, no reset button.
There was a way to do that. And I just wanted more from this.
It would have been cool to have those, like, those or other organizations that are from those communities in Chicago who are trying to address the issues of crime and violence, like, have them be in the game and not just pamphlets at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Like, have those characters exist.
Make that the game.
You have uncles. You have people. Like, it's yeah. Tim just showed us lifted up a card that said Chirac, and like, I'm not here to shout out Spike Lee Chirac, actually.
Yeah.
Actually.
yep.
Speaking of things that maybe didn't handle the violence in Chicago correctly.
Yeah. Just that whole term.
It's a little bit
anyway.
Problematic content.
I'm glad that they tried to make this game. I hope that that's a team that continues to hone its craft and tries to make something else. I completely wish them well. Fuck the people on the Steam forums who are being shitty about it.
Yes.
Like, they are why it's clear that more games like this need to exist. But also, I just thought this was, like, really fucking rough. So,
yeah. Do you have, like, do you have a piece of advice for, like, if you were going to make We Are Chicago 2... Or
well, one, don't call it that.
Yeah, maybe not. If you're going to make the next game that does what this game wants to do, is there a guiding principle?
I mean, I think it's the thing that you just said, which is like, consider
player experience goals.
Yeah, like instead of trying, there's a very scattershot vision here of like, or again, like they have the one thing, which I think is the valuable thing of just like, I want to be able to take my sister to go play, but also this friend of mine has an older brother who is gang affiliated, which means that even though he hasn't done shit, being around him puts my little sister in danger. That conflict is like, that's the heart of what that game should be, of like, this is a shitty situation. I don't know how to move here.
Mm-hmm.
There are guideposts for things like this. Like, we're not 5 years removed from Good Kid, Mad City. We're 3 years out from when Chance put out Acid Rap, which has a song Paranoia, which is about a friend of his getting killed. Like, there are great pieces of work that address the notion of having to move in these violent spaces. Seek guidance from those spaces. Obviously, they obviously did interviews, like you mentioned, Patrick, but, like, they need to get closer to that to that specific core experience and not try to just like hit every little aspect, because the only thing that you end up feeling is like that they missed stuff or that none of that stuff was dealt with comprehensively.
Well, and it ends up feeling like a very the simplistic take. It feels like I read a Wikipedia page about like life on South Side of the Chicago, as opposed to like if they had focused on like one specific story rather than saying, let's tell the story of what it's like on the South Side of Chicago. It's like, here is one story from one instance of one thing for one family that will then. That may not tell the whole story, but it will color how you look at everything else in a way that is more useful than what we ended up with. Totally. I mean, like, there's even like dialogue where randomly Aaron's like, "We spend too much money on jails," and it's like, Aaron, you wouldn't be saying that. Like, it's right. just like it, you could see right. them trying to get more. Not that I'm not implying that Aaron wouldn't be smart enough to know that, but you often felt like they were jamming a lot of related Correct. Political topics into conversations so they could almost checkbox it, as opposed to it being something the same way that you talked about, like, they mm-hmm. all they talk about is the experience of being black, which is not how people would actually talk. It also is like, we need to talk about all the sort of checkbox political moments that you would talk about in the larger context of this, but does that not feel organic or natural to
yep.
how actual people talk about it? So anyway.
we are Chicago. Waypoint.
We are Waypoint. Yeah, great.
We're move. Yeah,
I think it might be just time to pivot to the bucket and shake out all these just vibes. Out those vibes.
Crunch there.
Game, don't kill my vibe. I just need to like. All right, I'm gonna go to the bucket. I think the first place we have to start is the Brooklyn definition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Souls-like. We had a lot of mail of excellent letters.
Excellent.
I want to say like I don't even want to say they're like email. It's like missives that were written.
Yes.
Like you know like a very. The Brooklyn definition, I feel like this was on, like, proper stationery.
Yep.
This came in.
Totally.
You know?
Totally. Let me just do a search of my email. I want to make sure I get all possible Brooklyn definition emails here. That's very important. All right. This is too long. I'm going to skip this one. I'll come back to it. I want a nice short one to start with. There's one in here that I thought was, like, all right, this is a good starter point here for us. All right. So. All right. Here we go. This comes in from Peter, and he says, I think that bonfires are absolutely critical in our understanding mm-hmm. of the Souls-like. I would argue that we are not formulating this definition if Neo did not – that we would not be formulating this definition if Neo did not include them. That if Neo was a game that didn't have bonfires, we wouldn't even be talking about this stuff. So I suggest this addition. Souls-like games contain bonfires. The intrinsic aspect of bonfires are they are checkpoints, activating one repopulates the enemies in the surrounding area, which is a very important part. There is no clearing – permanently clearing a space if you also stop to level up or fix your equipment or whatever. They provide access to character improvement by providing a menu or instant travel to a central hub, and they are safe. I think those four things are all really good like starting places for thinking about bonfires or safe points in these games.
Yeah, I wonder – I don't know if the repopulation aspect – I mean I think if – so I'm loathe to be that specific as much as like – If what you're saying is like bonfires are a safe place in which I almost remove it and say like you are not actually able to make a permanent impact on the world, right? Like that's sort of what the bonfire yeah. implies. Like I could see a game including something like a bonfire, but that for some reason they get rid of the fact that the world repopulates or does it in a different way. It's the lack of permanence other than like defeating bosses is part of what makes playing a Souls game both feel futile and part of what makes it interesting is because you know, you can clear out a whole place, but then in order to continue progressing, you have to go back through that slog all over again. So it's possible that repopulation is key to that. I may also wonder if there's like a way of like making that slightly vaguer that gives like some more granularity to what that actually means.
Right. Well, one of the things with Neo is that the bosses, you can refight bosses. Because you're taking missions to go through levels. Levels don't exist in a world in the same way, right? Is that correct?
So you can't go back to an area and like refight it on a harder difficulty, but there are missions that will take you back through that same area, and there might be like a different boss there.
Okay. But it isn't. But I guess what I'm saying is there isn't just like, oh, I want to go here to the place as it is. Period. Full stop. Like everything's always subdivided into missions.
Yes.
Unlike the Souls games where like, no, it's just the space is the space.
Yeah.
And you might have a quest that happens to be happening there, but like isn't a quest being like the weird Souls ambiguous thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's fair.
This is my favorite final one was just the subject title. Good. Is Left 4 Dead a Souls-like? I don't think it is, but I appreciate I see where that comes from.
Yeah.
There are safe rooms. There are bonfires.
Mm-hmm.
You do level up your character because there's ammo and weapons in there.
Oh, Uninvincible in the chat, just to clarify before I get a bunch of tweets about it, says you can replay missions. I guess I've just never tried.
Good to know. Good to know that.
Okay.
Let's get another really. I'm going to go to that long one that I was like, I'm going to skip this. I'm going to read this one.
Yeah, let's do this one.
All right, this is from Ares. Ares 42. The core tenet to almost everything in the Souls games boils down to one thing: discovery. Or rather, the sense of discovery. Every item you find is something new and interesting. Every location you go to is somewhat epic and amazing. Every boss fight you fight, or even most enemies, they're puzzles to untangle. It's why the story is told in its slow and convoluted way. It's why most characters you meet are enigmatic. It's why the games are generally made with little guidance. Now, a lot of people say that these games are great because of the challenge, and they enjoy the victory rush that they get out of it. However, the challenge is only a means to an end. For a discovery to give any sort of satisfaction, there has to be obstacles in the way to reach it, and the tougher the obstacles are, the more satisfying it is to finally break through. It's how you were talking about the games being about moving from sanctuary to sanctuary. If there was no danger zone to scour your way through, then finally discover the next bonfire, it would be just as satisfying. Finally discovering the next bonfire would just be as satisfying as finding another coin in a Mario game. Even when you look at something very basic as the core combat, discovery is an important part. They aren't games that give you a bunch of different utility and damage skills that allow you to deal with any situation. Instead, they stick to a very few basic moves, and it's all about learning how to use them effectively. Anyone that's played these games has gone through the slow evolution of carefully taking on enemies one by one, hiding behind their shield and poking at the enemies, or eventually elegantly avoiding their attacks while smashing or stabbing them to pieces in seconds. It's been shown time and time again that people doing different challenges in speedruns, learning how the game works, is half the battle. It's also very evident, this is a long one, it's also very evident how important discovery is to these games if you look at the comments and forums where people interested in the games try to ask for advice. You will almost always find an overwhelming reply of don't spoil yourself or try to learn as you go. And if you talk to pretty much any Souls aficionado, they will tell you how the absolute best time to play these games is when they are still unexplored and the community is excavating its way through it together. On a personal note, I find playing these games to play very hard into my Indiana Jones fantasies. Huh. While a game like Uncharted is playing an Indiana Jones movie, Souls games are like the ones that actually capture the feeling of being an explorer and going on dangerous adventures into unknown tombs and lost ruins. That's a really interesting angle. I hadn't thought about that angle. That's like, I read that paragraph, I was like, ah, shit, I wish I hadn't read that so I could have told the person to pitch me. Because that's a nice...
Pitch that piece.
That's a clever analogy.
You could probably elaborate that paragraph into 800 words. Yeah, I think if you had to distill Souls-like or Souls into one word, like if you were to take the highest level,
that's
of
the
like,
player experience goal.
Player experience
like discovery.
Goal.
Yeah, I think discovery
go.
Is probably the word. I think he's probably
like
right, because I think almost everything, like or not maybe not everything, but a lot of it then feeds out through. Through discovery, mystery ties into that, but mystery is also like something a little more specific as opposed to discovery, which like is a little broader, and that mystery can kind of fall under that umbrella.
I'm gonna write down discovery.
And in the cheesiest sense, you do kind of discover things about yourself as you go through the journey.
Uh huh.
Which
when will you throw
thing,
a controller at the wall? Or hit your desk with it like I did.
You might
and
hit
make
your
a
desk.
Dent in
I've
your
got a dent
desk.
Right here. Got a dent right next to my microphone.
I love that I love that you've dented a desk and people are in their heads are like, oh, it must be a metal desk. No.
No, it's a cheap IKEA desk.
It's a cheap IKEA desk.
So I think the metal desk might have taken out the DualShock before taking a dent.
Oh, I feel like frustration and exhilaration have to be somewhere in this. I know those are aesthetic things. I know those are softer things and a little bit difficult to place on a grid, but maybe frustration and catharsis is a better way of putting it. Like, you have to be frustrated to get your catharsis, and one feeds into the sort of impact of the second part.
It might be that, like, the frustration and catharsis comes from the fact that the game demands that you learn. Right. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's like a little higher up on that hierarchy, because like the frustration comes from the fact that you're not learning. Like it's a different kind of action game in which if you choose to not study, like you can't spam, like, you know, that, you know, you can sometimes fumble way through. But by and large, like the Souls games or Souls like ask you to pay attention to what's going on, or else it will push back. And what's always unique about those games is that when you push back, the game will get out of the way. Like the game is happy. Like you can exploit the Souls games. Like the game sets up a set of rules and then says, you know, if you decide to bend him, that's fine. And I find that it's kind of unique in that regard.
So here's a point that I wanted to – someone brought this up to me on Twitter later after our last conversation, and reading of the kind of discovery argument makes me want to bring this back up too, which is – and also the kind of like difficulty catharsis,
frustration catharsis.
One angle, too, that we should be thinking about is, like, they're not just obscure. They're obscure in ways that encourage community exploration. Mm. There are lots of games that are obtuse.
Yes.
And that are opaque and don't present their mechanics clearly. There's a whole line of flight simulators out there that are like, oh, if you don't read this huge book, you're just not going to do anything. But these games are designed so that through experimentation, you get that sense of discovery. But more than that, they enable you to communicate with other people, both in the game text itself by leaving notes and by working with other players, by leaving summoning signs, but also are just designed such to encourage you to go online and talk to people. And I think that to me, that sense of like some sort of like opacity designed towards community interaction, something like that, is at least a low factor for me of what these games are. I can imagine a game like that. I don't know that I can imagine a Souls-like game that doesn't have.
Well, how that manifests itself is different, right? So Neo doesn't have messages that you leave behind. Like it ditches that completely.
Totally.
But the experience I have with every Souls-like game, one of my favorite experiences is the text messages I have with my friends who are all collectively experiencing it at the same time. So, I have, like, especially with, like, Kirk Hamilton, who's also really into these games, like, we have, and Brad Shoemaker, who plays a lot of these games, like, extensive text messages that are just, like, predominantly, like, have you gotten to this boss? Like, what did you do with that boss? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you find this thing? Like, I don't understand how the blacksmith works. Like, so that, how that manifests itself, I think, is different, but I think that community, like, forcing players or at least, like, highly encouraging players to better understand what they're doing through community, whether that is, like, actual messages that are sent through the world or, like, just through the obliqueness and the challenge, like, you are forced for most people to, like, seek help and shelter and recommendation elsewhere. And that is not cheating. That is sort of intrinsic to the design to be like, how am I, you know, what is some way that I can tackle this boss? And when someone tells you that, because the Souls games are so much about execution, like the knowledge does not necessarily equal success. It just gives you the ability to possibly execute on that. So I think the fact that Neo takes away the message system, I think is fine, but it still finds ways to have players communicate and work with one another, even if that happens in different ways.
Teeter Tatter in the chat mentions that one of the things that Neo does that the Souls games don't is that the kind of bloodstain equivalent, the gravestones in Neo, tell you specifically how a character died and not just that someone died. And so like, oh, this there's a whatever the wheels are. The wheel monk. It's like it killed me. And like, oh, okay, I should be on the lookout for one of those because I don't see one of those right now. Those sorts of things are – that's one way that it still encourages or still
– In-game communication. Yeah.
Right. Or just the like, oh, there are 12 graves right there. Like something bad is around that corner. You know?
Well, yeah, and you can fight them. That's also something unique that I think is a really cool part of Neo is that like when you see someone has died – you can resurrect their character, fight them, and possibly get a rare drop. And I think it actually feeds in later into a system where you can get like unique equipment if you are continuing to like. It says you're getting honor, so I don't know if it ever explained the exact mechanics. I don't know if like you're putting their soul to rest if you're like resurrecting them and putting them down. But that part is really cool because I mean there are sequences where when you walk in the Souls games. There are these blood stains that indicate that, you know, players died, but it's pretty limited. Like, you're certainly not seeing every death around you. And Neo is not showing you every death, but, man, it's showing you way more than – like, you'll sometimes walk into a room and you'll see 25, 30 of these swords. And And it's a little thing I've wanted to write about the game because the feeling of walking into a room and just seeing – these bloodied swords everywhere is fucking terrifying because because it immediately communicates something about what you haven't yet experienced but you know is about to occur, and already puts you on edge before you even know what's going to come out around the corner.
This last one is from Friendly Truffle in the chat, and I think I need to sleep on this. I think my gut is to disagree. They say, I think all of this is danced around a core concept of work always provides a reward, and that there's a difficulty wall where little work or casual work provides little reward. I'm not sure that these games say that work always provides a reward.
Yeah.
I think
sometimes you just suffer.
And sometimes you get lucky.
Sometimes you get lucky.
Or sometimes you cheese it. And we codify that as being okay in these games.
Yeah.
So I get what's going. I think there is a sort of work that finds reward that is careful but also maybe monotonous. There's probably a track of like monotonous play is the easiest, like gets the most reward.
Right.
But I also think narratively most of these games don't believe that work gets rewarded, which and I think that's in line with the thematics of like you working really hard and then getting it all swiped away because a ball of giant skeletons rolled into you.
Yep.
I don't know, but I'll sleep on it. I see where they're coming from. I think this heated episode of Waypoint Radio is going to come to a conclusion.
Hot heat episode 39.
Yeah, just deep breaths. We got a whole week ahead of us. I can't use up all my energy.
Yeah, no, you got to save some of that.
I might not be here Friday though.
I was gonna say, yeah, you're save your energy by not expending energy.
Oh boy, I'm taking a vacation this week, going through next week.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're not still fully confident what a vacation means to Austin Walker.
We'll figure it out.
That's the real thing.
I'm gonna do my best to like, go to a museum. I'm gonna see some friends. I'm not gonna be in town, so like I literally won't be able to come into the office.
That's good.
That's
you better not be at a Starbucks at that museum working. That's what we're trying to say.
Can I just check in?
We'll limit you. It's like an Estes flask. You can only have a certain amount of check-ins before you're cut off.
See, we're turning this into a Souls like.
You have to go find the bonfire at a museum or something.
Okay, or take a nap. I'll take a nap. I can check in.
That's great.
Waves of Baby says, how many emails will you answer? Let me see what I'm at. I'm at 400 and something, so probably that many. I do want to get through my emails this week.
Okay.
For that week. That's my one work thing I definitely want to do. I'm going to be on a plane for a lot of it, so like that's good email time.
That's fine. On the plane, you can check emails.
Okay.
And then you can check in for each nap that you take.
Thank you, Danielle.
You're welcome.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
Danielle R.I.
What about you, Patrick?
Find me on Twitter at Patrick Klumpik.
You can find me at Austin_Walker. You can find our producer, Tim Barnes, at TimBarnes451. And you can shout outs to Bowen, who does our song, Miss You, off of his EP Pale Machine that we use as our theme song at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can find everything we do at waypoint.vice.com, at bastionfucks.com.
Good. Yeah, Patrick just gave up on life. That was a lot of notebooks.
And a billion other websites, links, referrals.
Oh, good.
I think it's going to do it for us.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Bastion Fucks.
Bastion Fucks.
Have a good week. We will see you on Friday. Peace.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.